Hello and welcome to the Tenable Research Podcast. My name is Dan Rayward. I'm a product marketing manager here at Tenable. Now I'm here this month with the Tenable, well, the research podcast, quite literally, talking to Claire Tills from the security response team about the recent patch release from Microsoft and a brand new blog which harks back to the TLR, the Threat Landscape Retrospective, which came out in January, looking at prominent vulnerabilities from the past 12 months. So let's move straight on and talk to Claire. And joining us now from the Tenable security response team is Claire Tills, Senior Research Engineer. Claire, great to have you on board this month and flying solo for the SRT. We're going to kick off then with the Patch Tuesday for March, of course, which went third one this year, obviously, as it being the third month. And, well, significantly more patches this month than last month. But the majority were rated as important. I mean, what was interesting here about this particular Patch Tuesday?
Right. So last month we saw only important vulnerabilities disclosed in Microsoft's Patch Tuesday release, which was interesting and notable and complicated things a bit for defenders, because if everything's important, what do you patch first? This month, we saw a little bit of a difference where there were three critical vulnerabilities disclosed, as well as 3 0-days patched. So that kind of helped with the prioritization situation. The 71 is still not, you know, notable. If we look at the past like 6 to 7 months, 71 is actually pretty high for what we've been seeing lately. But if we look back just a couple of years, we were hitting, you know, 120 regularly with patches. So it's honestly reassuring to see this trend of more manageable patch loads coming out from Microsoft month to month.
Well, interesting, because last month everything was rated important and it was actually quite a hard one to determine which patches we should prioritize to actually fix, of course. And we did discuss this in the podcast that we recorded and released in February, so do check that one out. But in March, there were 3 0-days fixed. So what do we know about them and their impact and exploitation?
Yeah, it was interesting this month because, like I said, there were 3 critical vulnerabilities and 3 0-days, and those did not overlap. The 0-days that were patched were rated as important rather than critical. The first one of interest is a remote code execution in the remote desktop client, which is something we've seen very often. This one is CVE-2022-21990. The next we had was an elevation of privilege vulnerability in Windows Fax and Scan service, which stuck out to us because that's just an interesting service to have a researcher poking around in. And that one was CVE-2022-24459. And then finally, there was a 0-day patched in the .NET and Visual Studio protocol. And that one is CVE-2022-24512. That was also a remote code execution. So those are kind of the 3 0-days, kind of a weird mix of things we've seen before, but nothing that we've the first one, remote desktop client, we've seen happening a lot in terms of 0-days, as well as in terms of attacker exploitation, and also just regularly patched from Microsoft. The other two are less common in terms of public exploitation or uses a 0-day. So those ones, we don't have as much information as we would hope. We haven't seen any, you know, third-party write-ups of the researchers who disclosed them or any reports on exploitation, but interesting to see those compared to things like Microsoft Exchange or remote desktop client, which are, you know, frequent flyers.
Yeah, we see a lot of RDP, don't we? And I guess something we have covered fairly extensively in the past is, you know, the particular tactics that attackers use. And obviously Exchange is something that we see quite a lot of. Another one particular area that was featured as part of Patch Tuesday in March, of course, from Microsoft, was around Windows Fax and Scan service. This was as part of CVE-2022-24459. I know you wrote quite extensively about Print Nightmare last year, and I thought you were rid of it, but it seems to never go away. Talk to me about Windows Fax and Scan service. I mean, is this related to Print Nightmare or any kind of print spooler? I mean, I've never come across it, to be honest.
Yeah, it's It's related in that it is one of those services that is everywhere. It's similar in its utility to Print Spooler, but in terms of the vulnerabilities being identical, of course, there's significant differences. But it is one of those where we saw it on the list and we're like, wait, what? Facts and scan. But it's very similar in our reactions to Print Spooler. We're like, people are still using this. And then you think about the businesses that do still rely on printing and scanning. They're likely also the businesses that still rely on printing. So once you think about it a little deeper, it's not necessarily as surprising that researchers or attackers, again, this was one of the ones disclosed as a zero day, but we don't have any specific background on what sort of attacks it was seen in, or whether it was just publicly disclosed by a researcher who put out proof of concept before there was a patch. We just know that it was publicly disclosed before the March Patch Tuesday release.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, maybe it's one we'll see again. I don't know, but it's kind of hard to determine because, like I say, you know, go back to Print Spooler in 2021 and we'd probably thought maybe one off, but it turned to be, you know, one of the major vulnerabilities. Also, just another one more patch which just stood out to me was actually the critical rated. Only three critical rated vulnerabilities, if I recall correctly. Yeah, three. And this one was CVE-2022-23277. This is a fix for Microsoft Exchange Server. And I mentioned just before, of course, we see that quite a lot. Which maybe think, you know, maybe what's critical here. But what was of interest about this particular vulnerability?
The interest was really that it was in Microsoft Exchange Server. We've seen vulnerabilities like Proxy Logon and Proxy Shell exploited very extensively in Microsoft Exchange Server over the last year and change. And so as soon as we see Microsoft Exchange Server, particularly when we see remote code execution, that immediately gets our attention and jumps in priority for us because we know attackers are looking for these vulnerable endpoints. With anything Microsoft Exchange Server, we strongly urge folks to find affected endpoints and patch them immediately.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. It's as critical here. It becomes very, very prominent and it becomes, it's something that we see a lot of. It's probably worth taking consideration of. Now, shifting tack a little bit, we're going to hop back to the threat landscape retrospective, which regular listeners will recall came out in mid-January of this year. This was a quite significant document written by Claire and the other members of the SRT, looking at threats and vulnerabilities from the past 12 months. Now, among the pages of this, I think it was about nearly 70 pages of this particular report, was at the top five vulnerabilities as determined by the SRT, which determined the most prominent flaws from the past year. They actually said in this TLR that there were 21,957 new CVEs assigned in 2021. So from that, how do you pick five particular vulnerabilities? Well, actually, a new blog has just come out, authored by Claire, just as we're recording, actually, and it's in mid-March. And it looks at let's call it 6 to 10, if you're looking at like the top 10 vulnerabilities of that top 10. And also, you know, which kind of explains, first of all, the methodology going into selecting those top 10 and also selecting why these particular five didn't make the final cut. So first of all, Claire, what makes a certain vulnerability stand out over another for you?
Yeah, so one of our key tasks whenever we're writing the TLR is making sure that we're drawing appropriate attention to appropriate vulnerabilities, particularly over the past couple of years. I think it was even more of an issue in 2020 than it was in 2021, was combing through the sea of named vulnerabilities and finding out whether any of those, you know, really raised to the level of concern the name might have implied, compared to vulnerabilities that never got a name, never got any branding, didn't get a flashy GIF or logo or anything like that. And kind of looking at those impacts and seeing what were the top five, like what were the vulnerabilities that if you are looking at this document right now and you have not patched them, you should immediately drop everything you're doing and go take care of them. What are those top five vulnerabilities? And the things that we kind of consistently find are, it is a mixed bag, but there are certain things we talk about in the TLR. You know, for example, perimeter type devices like VPNs are primary targets, things that are ubiquitous. Microsoft has a huge footprint throughout our TLR, but particularly in our top fives as well. And things that are heavily exploited by attackers. And I would love to be able to just know which vulnerability coming out an attacker is going to grab on, but a lot of it has to be retrospective. We have to look back and say, okay, this is what attackers have been exploiting. And we know that attackers are typically creatures of habit. So if they have been exploiting it, they will continue to exploit it until they can't anymore. So we're kind of banking on the fact that if they've had success with these vulnerabilities in the past, they'll keep using it in the future, similar to what we just talked about with Microsoft Exchange. So those are a couple of very loose categories we look at to kind of cull the list of 20,000 plus down to maybe a couple dozen when we're making our decisions.
Yeah, sure. Well, I said in the blog, there is the explanation of the methodology, and obviously, you know, do heartily recommend that you take a look at the TLR as well. We'll add links to both the blog and to the TLR download page in the show notes in order that you can actually go and look at those. But it's, yeah, like I said, 21,957, I think, was the number of CVEs assigned in 2021 from that pick 10. But yeah, I think you've explained it there. These are the things that, you know, make it worse. And I'm just going to, an aside, of course, one of those, and Terry, a little spoiler for anyone who has not read it, one of the top five, actually top 10, as far as I recall, isn't Log4j, because as I think you address this in the TLR itself, is that this A, came out at the very end of the year, B, it probably doesn't fit that methodology. It just, for whatever reason, I don't know if that one's disappeared now as we record in March, but it's that was a kind of a short-term thing.
Yeah, I do address in the blog post why Log4Shell did not appear on the list, as kind of a way of describing that methodology of like, hey, here are our criteria, and if you put Log4Shell up to these criteria on, you know, January 10th when we were trying to lock down this report, it did not meet these criteria. And as time is going on, we're still on the SRT kind of going back and forth and debating, like, do we think it's actually going to make the top five for 2022? And we'll see.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid point. I think, yeah, like I said, we're mid-March. Are we still talking about it? I think some people probably are. Some people, you know, probably still see it as a big thing, but you know, time is serving that one quite interestingly. But looking back at the top five then, and the initial top five, and this six to ten, as we'll call it, do you think you were kind of looking to have a variety of vulnerabilities, rather than say two to three being, you know, RDP or Exchange, for example? You know, here's the three worst Exchange things, they're the worst things ever. Do you think there's kind of an element of thinking, like, we want to try and make sure we have a variety of vulnerabilities? I think, sometimes you, I think, was it 2020's report had a number of VPN flaws? So was it,
yeah,
was that the case?
Yeah. So in 2020, we had three of the five vulnerabilities that made that top list were in SSL VPN products. And that was somewhat of a conscious decision. And then in 2021, we made a almost contrary conscious decision of, when we were looking at our list of the top 10, there were a few VPN devices present on that list. And we kind of looked at them next to each other and said, okay, well, if we have this one, so Pulse Connect Secure and Authentication Bypass, that made the top five list. And we're like, okay, well, we have this one. And comparatively, the SonicWall SMA SQL injection just doesn't quite cut the mustard in comparison. And we have other vulnerabilities. Like, we've got this top 10 full of very serious vulnerabilities. So if we've already got VPNs mentioned once, it gives us an avenue to talk about this, this, you know, threat area. And we should save the other spaces we have to talk about something different. So we could talk about Zero Logon, we can talk about Principler, we can talk about Exchange Server. We had VMware vSphere in there. So we wanted to have it be a little more diverse in 2021 because the threat landscape was a little more diverse in 2021.
Yeah, absolutely. If you go back to 2016, I know we obviously won't here in 2016. But if you go back to 2016, it was, yeah, the threats were all about ransomware, end of 2016. Mm-hmm. We're all about ransomware because WannaCry, NotPetya, et cetera, those kind of things. But like I said, the threats were pretty diverse. And well, that leads me to the next question, actually, because I was going to sort of mention, you know, about the hype, because, you know, we've talked about Log4j. I just mentioned, you know, okay, WannaCry wasn't the vulnerability, but, you know, things like, I'll cast my mind back to Heartbleed and, yeah, Bad BIOS and Shellshock and all these ones that, I don't know, sometimes they had the like the logos ready. They've been to the creative team, they've got all that ready and that kind of thing. Is it important for you to identify vulnerabilities that will be an issue for businesses and will remain an issue, rather than sort of saying, here's the one that had like the best PR campaign behind it?
We've gone back and forth. We've always been tempted to do a longitudinal analysis on like getting a list of all of the named vulnerabilities from a year and seeing what impact they actually had. Like, were they actually effective? Were they adopted by attackers and kind of what characteristics? And maybe we'll do that one day. But what we tend to look at in the TLR, and particularly when we're compiling the top 10 and culling it down to the top five, is strictly impact. And we often find that it is vulnerabilities that just have a CVE and do not have a name that do have that impact. And there are a lot of factors that come around from it. And we've got a lot of exceptions to that rule. Yeah, you'll see the top five actually does have named vulnerabilities in it. But it's really almost ignoring the names and looking at just at a list of the CVEs and the technical details and the effect they had on the cybersecurity landscape. That is what we're looking at. We tend to remove the names and the titles and the jazzy branding and see what's going on. And then if it's got a name, we put that back in. But overall, it's particularly VPN vulnerabilities, very rarely do they get names. And they're the ones we consistently see wreaking havoc and providing a lot of unfortunate value for attackers.
I guess a lot of the time, by their nature, vulnerabilities are, well, wait a minute, 0 days, which we'll get to in just a second. But a lot of them aren't that, how do I put this? You know, they're not got that kind of sort of campaign behind it. You know, they're discovered, they are, you know, they go through the disclosure process of 90 days, which, you know, a lot of people obviously typically do. So it does kind of come along, and sometimes it's given a name, you know, which enables people, like especially media, to kind of work with it, because you can't always put a list of numbers like CV2022, etc. But it does help. But at the same time, I think a lot of people will kind of roll their eyes when they hear a name and think, well, yeah, there's the logo and I don't take this very seriously. But it's, I guess we kind of just roll back to what we're talking about with the important patches from Microsoft. You know, you deem this to be what's important for your business, depending on what you're running. If it's, like you said, VPN vulnerabilities, if you're not running a VPN, probably not many people who aren't, but you know, if you're not using that particular vendor's VPN software, then it's probably not a concern for you. But I guess something like Log4j was so prominent that, as we've talked about already, it was kind of a short-lived thing in terms of its hype. But let's just sort of move on just to sort of the 0 day fact, because you mentioned that the vulnerabilities that did not make the cut were all 0 days. Again, this is the 6 to 10 that feature in this new blog post. Only two of the final top five were. Do you think that's because 0 days may not have that long tail that a more persistent vulnerability would?
Yeah, that's one of the key features for us making this decision for a lot of the vulnerabilities that didn't quite make it from the top 10 into the top five was this long tail. So we have things in the top 6 to 10, things like Kaseya VSA and Excellion, both of which made huge news and were very disruptive to the organizations that they impacted. But the impact was localized when compared to something like Zero Logon, Proxy Logon, or Print Nightmare, which were widespread, almost not random, but just so widespread, as you know, diverse attackers with diverse intentions are using these vulnerabilities, whereas the attacks via Kaseya, Excellion, and a lot of the other vulnerabilities we see on our list that were 0 days, those were very targeted attacks. And the fact that they're targeted means that they're smaller scale. So I think that's what we see. And it does kind of lend credence to a lot of the messaging and a lot of the discourse that we hear saying, it's not necessarily the 0 days that you need to be concerned with. It is the, you know, legacy vulnerabilities. It's the stuff you've had sitting around for years and years that hasn't been patched, that's still exposed to the internet. And these, while they still made the top 10, do actually support that argument because they're 0 day vulnerabilities and they just were used in these very targeted attacks, meaning attackers had very specific goals. They wanted to go after specific organizations for a specific purpose and put in the effort to develop 0 days to achieve that goal. Whereas the opportunistic attackers, they're going to find something that Microsoft patched 2 years ago that you have not applied to your systems, and they're going to use the public POC that everyone is already using. So I think that's kind of what we saw playing out, is the things that made it into the top five weren't necessarily 0 days because they were the things that were easy for all attackers to adopt quickly and get into their playbooks with minimal effort.
Yeah. And like you said, legacy vulnerabilities, or, you know, those that have been around a lot longer, 0 days by their nature are, you know, pretty rapidly patched, aren't they?
Yeah.
Legacy vulnerabilities, you know, whether it's like important, going back to what we talked about earlier, even moderate vulnerabilities, moderate rates, I think there's data out there from Tenable, you know, that says actually these are the bigger threats to your businesses than the latest, you know, hack attack, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the blog post is available now at tenable.com/blog. We'll put a link in the show notes to that. And also do check out other podcasts, which we released in January, which is all about the TLR, which also featured Claire and, of course, Scott and Satnam as well. But for this time, Claire Tills, thank you very much for joining us. And thanks very much for the insight.
Yeah, thanks, Dan.
And once again, big thanks to Claire for joining us this month, and of course to you for listening. Notes that I referred to in the podcast are available for you to click on. Obviously, the blog is there, as well as the TLR download page. And again, I'll put in a link to the January page as well, January podcast, excuse me, where you can actually go back and review all of the TLR. They'd be very welcome to do that. Pick out the highlights that the TLR had. It feels a lot in there to digest, and hopefully you've had time to look over it by now. Do check out some recent podcasts. We featured an interview with the outgoing CTO, Renaud de Raison. He is at the time of recording still with Tenable, but on his way out. Of course, he was the inventor of Nessus, and he was one of the co-founders of Tenable. And he talked to us as he left the company. And also, we've got a podcast coming up, which you should be hearing in the next few days, about making it as a researcher. What kind of things a researcher does. If you ever look to the people who talk on stage or even talk to on these podcasts, like, how do I get to do that? Well, look out for that coming out in the next few days. But for now, thanks very much for listening. If you want to contact me, my name's Dan Rayward. You can find me on Twitter at Dan Rayward and other social media. But for now, thanks very much, and we'll see you next time.